with certified financial planner Dave Petzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo. Every week I go in and visit with Kevin Miller and have an absolute blast. It's about 30 minutes every Monday. We're going to go ahead and replay that, and I'll be talking to you live in about 30 minutes.
And finally to KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Dave Petzo joining us as he does. Good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
Big day for the Dow.
Big day, big week last week. 18,000 again. How about that?
So for all the doomsayers that we hear about all the time that say that the collapse is imminent, our demise is certain, what do you say?
Well, sorry, wrong again. Wrong for the thousandth time. You know, it's one of those things that people won't stop chirping about. And negativity sells, Kevin. It really does. And it's not that everything's always good all the time. Market's correct. You know, you remember back in February we talked about this, right? So it's down, down, down. And it was down a lot early in the year. It really was. We were off badly the first 6 weeks of the year. And then all of a sudden, this is normal. This is what they do. They go down, and then they work their way back to all-time highs. Then they correct, and they work their way back. And that's what the cycle has been for our entire lives, our parents' lives, our grandparents' lives. It just, that's what happens. But for some reason, people still want to believe all the doomsday writers that talk about why this time is different and it really will end.
Dave Petzo with us here at 580 KIDO. Well, what about a correction? When can we tell when a correction is on its way?
You can't. That's the thing. I mean, it's what everybody tries to game. It's a crazy thing that we try to game. You know, all the great investors, Warren Buffett, John Templeton, Peter Lynch, Michael Price, all the incredibly great managers. No, these were great investors. They were great. And those people always said you can't time the market. In fact, John Templeton went on to say, you know, we spent millions of dollars studying all kinds of systems, and we never have found anything to be consistently good in timing the market. Thus, the conclusion is, in my mind, when the great investors can't do it, I can't either. And so sitting around and trying to guess when the next correction is going to come, all that ever does is keep people out of the greatest wealth-building game that has ever been created, and that is to invest in and buy the great corporations of the world and get out of their way and let them go do their thing.
Right, but on the other hand, you know, we talk about investing. How do you maintain faith? So I thought about this over the weekend, when you have fluctuations in the markets, in 09.
Well, I will say that when you get that kind of financial collapse like we had in 08, and especially in the beginning of 09, markets wildly swinging. We didn't know what was going on. What did it mean with QE and all these things? What it was going to do to the markets? And the answer is it is hard. You just have to look at history and say it's been hard before, and this is why. Even though some people are like, I didn't call for a history lesson, blah, blah, blah. The point of history is to help calm us down when there is a storm. The point of understanding what markets do. You know, that's one of the things when we were talking at the office one time a few years ago, and I was saying, do you know what the best market year was? No. Well, it was 1934. Okay. I said, no, it's a big deal. Do you know why that's a big deal? And it's because it's a big deal that you understand how markets come back after depressing times, that you understand the history and how bad things were and how good they turn out in the end. And it's important to understand history all the way back to the Depression, all the way back to World War II. Kevin, it is. It's something that you have to, on those times, you look at and you go, yeah, we've been here before. This is different. Every time is, but we've done this before.
Sure, but just to deal with the sheer panic of it all. And again, one of the reasons why this, you know, comes to mind is I'm listening to, you know, like everybody else here at 580KIDO, I listen to the radio, and then you have all these crazy commercials on from these national folks and everything else. And you think to yourself, well, you know, Dave Petzo, Petzo Center, Petzo Financial, you've been very successful. And then I'm, and as your clients, and I'm thinking to myself, well, then how, you know, how do you weather the storm? And there have been some storms. You know, people panic.
Kevin, it's a really good point, and they do. In 2008, in early 2009, that was a life-changing time for people. Now, they may not know it, but people bailed or they stayed, and it changed their financial future. And it changed it more than just, yep, we have three times the amount of money you did if you sold out then. The problem is people don't get back. They don't get back in. They change their whole investment style. And it really changes the trajectory of their life. It's a big deal. Excuse me. But during that time,
you get all
Kevin,
choked up about this.
I am.
Dave Petzo with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580-KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So we've had some earnings. Any big stars that you'd like to share with us, or any people that, you know, their progress report isn't so good?
No, actually, this was incredible, I thought, Thursday night. So Thursday night, or Thursday after the market closes, Google, Microsoft, Starbucks, and Visa. Now, these are big companies, dominant, important companies in the indices. They all missed earnings badly. Google and Microsoft were down over 5% on Friday. If you were going to make a case that the market would be able to sustain over Google, Microsoft, and Starbucks missing, there's no way. And that, to me, that just shows incredible underlying strength in the market to overcome that. So it wasn't because of good earnings, Kevin. It was actually the market's reaction to what was disappointing earnings. And it was impressive.
You know, and I think locally we're in kind of a boom time, if you will. You know, Dave Petzo, when I first came here in 2009, you know, there were no help wanted signs anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now we see it everywhere. And hopefully we can maintain that. Because, again, you want people to have a job, you want people to earn, you want people to have pride and not be on the government dole and everything else. But on the other hand, you know, you worry, is there a bubble about ready to happen?
Yeah, that's always the concern as we come out of any kind of a bubble like we did that popped. And that was pretty serious, as you well know.
Right.
It was disruptive for all kinds of people who got over-leveraged, you know, as we're discussing. It's a life-changing time for many people financially. So as we look at that type of period, we come back to it and keep wondering when the next bubble's going to burst. When we get far enough away from it, we quit talking about bubbles, and that's when a real bubble can occur. Okay?
Yeah.
It's just that right now we're so, and there's no leverage, Kevin. So I get that. I get what you're saying, and things that go up and they cycle. But again, we have this stepping, you know, we plateau a little bit, maybe come back a little bit, but then we always keep rising higher and higher. And that's, as an economy, there's more people, there's more money in the world, and the economy keeps growing.
All right. What are some of the growth sectors that people are buzzing about?
Always tech, because it's interesting what they're doing.
You heard the Chinese today, this is the China report, going after Apple, saying Apple is outdated and weak, China's on the rise. And there have been some folks, and you've been very high on this, although I don't see you wearing an Apple Watch yet.
No Apple Watch yet, you're right.
A lot of people wonder, what's the deal with the Apple Watch? It's not blowing up like the iPhone and the iPad and everything else.
Yeah, it's not, and so far. Now, it could be that it's going to take a couple of iterations here before they get enough wow apps on it. I don't know. But to me, it's an amazing device for people that have any medical condition. That's what it's going to be, an amazing device that tells time, but it also tells you your heart rate, your blood sugar, all kinds of things. Those are on the way, Kevin, and I think they're going to be amazing for people.
But on the other hand,
I sounded like Donald Trump there, didn't I? It's going to be amazing.
On the other hand, though, psychologically, you can be too tapped in. It's bad enough that we have these phones with our emails and the text. And then if you have an Apple Watch, I'm watching this, and these guys are looking at their emails on their watches.
They
aren't even going to their phones. And it's like, how much of this is productivity and how much of this is just goofiness?
Right. Well, I will tell you that for Jennifer Stone at our office, she has an iWatch. She loves it.
Yes.
And shows when she's walking around, she can tell she's getting texts or whatever coming
in. Well, Jennifer's very productive.
She's very productive.
She's the exception rather than the rule here in this one.
I would agree with you. So
right.
I think for some people it is. And for others, no, it's a distraction. For me, shiny object guy, it's a distraction. It would not be a productivity tool at all.
But you take a look at China taking a couple shots at Apple. What do you make of that?
I think that China's positioning themselves to try to make a run at just at not just being copycats. We can do it cheaper. They have to change their economy. They can't continue to just steal and think they can produce cheaper copyrighted stuff somewhere else. If they're going to sustain a billion-plus in a growing economy, they're going to have to change, and they're wanting to embrace technology. We're seeing it with the attempt. It wasn't really the attempt to buy Micron, but other tech businesses. They've been trying to buy into that space.
Well, and they have for years. You remember IBM once was in the laptop business, and that became Lenovo.
Right, exactly.
In the old days, yes.
Absolutely.
Nice. I was against that deal at the time, and no one listened to me then either.
They're not, well, they will now, Kevin, because we know what's happened now.
Dave Petzo with us here, Kevin Miller in the morning at 580 KIDO. So is it more earnings, or were we all done with the
No, earnings? No. It's all earnings right now. We're in the heart of it. It's going to be all about earnings. But this market is not all about one company, even as big and important as Google and Microsoft. Determining how the whole market's going to go.
But you take a look at Microsoft. Are they still as dominant, or have they just lost their way?
No, they seem to be making a comeback. And of all the funny things that they're really making a big comeback in, it's gaming. You know, apparently they're doing very well in gaming. What Xbox or something is theirs? I don't know.
Sure.
I'm not a gamer, so.
I'm shocked that you're not a gamer.
I know. Well, I've got so much free time. I just want to. Yeah. Anyway. I'm sure that there's people that love it, and I'm sure it would be fun. I just don't have time for it.
You have people of all ages gaming. It's amazing. They actually have premieres of games, just like movies, and apparently they're a lot more, ROI friendly, because you don't have the big production costs, and people just love this stuff. And people in their 60s as well as their 40s, and they love the games.
Yeah, absolutely.
They pay people now to game.
Yeah. Oh, really? They pay them to game.
Exactly.
Wow.
You see, now there's something that I'm
shocked.
With.
So wow. Now that would probably be every kid's fantasy would be to be paid to game.
Exactly. We're not talking Space Invaders, folks. Dave Petzo, Kevin Miller, Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
Sergeant R.J. Anderson's dream was to take to the skies.
I've always wanted to be a soldier, but my ultimate goal was to be a pilot. I think I was meant to fly. I had just applied to be a part of the 160th SOAR Regiment, and I was going to airborne school that next Monday. So I decided to go on a motorcycle ride with my buddies. We were going through a turn, and that's all I remember. That's the day everything changed. I was told by the doctor that I would never walk again. Thanks to Paralyzed Veterans of America, competing in adaptive sports lit my fire again. They help you transition for the rest of your life to that individual that you want to be. Sports like hand cycling really pushes you to find who you are in that redefining moment after injury. With PBA Sports, I've found my freedom. Now, when I think about my future, the possibilities are endless.
For more information, visit PBA.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
And Kevin Miller with Dave Petzo, 580 KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's talk a little bit about economic boycotts. You see what's going on in the state of North Carolina concerning transgendered bathrooms. Is this something that businesses have to deal with, the idea of social activism? You've got Bruce Springsteen saying, I'm not coming to North Carolina. Cyndi Lauper that's going to have some type of protest concert there. They've really turned the economic dollar into a weapon against a state. And you've got SAS there. You've got other major enterprises. You've got the Research Triangle Park, a lot of big businesses. You've got banks in Charlotte, as you know, that are going to be impacted, perhaps devastated because of this policy and because folks have decided to go after them economically. How do what impact does that have on businesses?
Typically very little. It doesn't have a lot. It obviously is a weapon that people get all furious about. But in the end, most of the time, not all the time, though, Kevin, it can work. We certainly have Arizona has Martin Luther King Day now. That's just political activism is what, or, you know, if you will, economic activism. The NFL wouldn't go there, stuff like that. So it can change things. But on this type of a scale, I'm not, obviously, I think we've gotten PC to, you know, some exponential level that is absurd. But it is something that each state, in my mind, has the right to choose what they're going to do. And I don't think that Springsteen or anybody else is going to affect that. I hope not. I really do. I think it's sometimes we don't know what we're wishing for. You know, when we push this off on other states, but then we don't want that pushed off on us at our state.
No, I'm with you. But again, you just see this type of role happening more often than not, you know, whether we agree with the policy or not, just from a practical point of view of how to handle it.
Right.
And, you know, you have people, you know, you look at Target now. They're opening up their bathrooms and people are on the other side of the aisle protesting Target, saying they're not going to shop there and that type of things as well. You know, does that affect Target at all?
Well, it does. Hopefully it'll die down. I mean, it does on one-off case, but unless this, you know, becomes a if you will, all-over-the-country situation, then it really does not impact Target. I think companies tend to, if you think about it back in the day, they used to accuse Procter & Gamble of being a tool of the devil. And so, you know, there was people were boycotting Procter & Gamble's products for a while. And of course, that dies out. But you know, where people just, it comes and goes, and people use this threat periodically, and they try to rally people up to support whatever cause they have, but it usually does not have a lasting impact on business.
Dave Petzl with us, Kevin Miller in the morning on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO. I have noticed gas prices going up.
Yes, we got the oil coming back, right? We're up over $40 a barrel in oil, so yes, it is. And Idaho was never the cheapest state out there in the first place. So.
Yeah, but I always thought that Idaho had to bottom out like everyone else. It's just kind of, we've kind of skipped that step, it seems.
We bottomed at what, 199 or something, just to say we got below $2?
If you buy the cheap gas, yes. If you buy the real gas, it was 223.
It was, yeah. Costco
the non-ethanol gas, yes.
If that came in a higher grade, does it? I can't ever
actually
find a high
does.
Enough
I'll,
grade.
I'll tell you where it is.
Okay, thanks. I can never find it. Yeah. I hear the car runs better.
It does.
That's what I've heard.
Allegedly. They've sold me on that.
They have.
But we go.
Well, I don't want to ruin my car now. I mean, I'm not sure I trust you fully. Hopefully a mechanic will actually call and confirm today.
Well, and that's another thing. You know, here we have the subsidy for ethanol that helps the folks in Iowa. On the other hand, if you have a small engine, whether it's a lawnmower or something like that, it destroys it.
Correct.
You know, and they urge you not to use more than 10% ethanol and to drain everything out. And you're thinking, you know, where can I get the real gas?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are some places here in the Treasure Valley where you can get the real gas, but it's not, you know, they're not everywhere. So
no, they're not. And usually the octane's too low. So
exactly, for your high-performance cars.
Yes.
Those of us that drive, you know, the old reliable cars.
The old reliable
not,
cars.
Not you, the sports cars.
Yes, that's true.
So what does this mean as far as gas going up, besides we're getting pinched at the pump just in time for the busy season for folks like Pat from Middleton that are landscapers and yard folks that really have benefited from the cheap gas?
They have. And, of course, on the downside, and really when you stop and you think about it, we're so much lower right now than we were that it still is a very big benefit to overall. And everything also, the other thing we forget is how much more fuel efficient everything is. Everything is. We use far less per mile gasoline than ever, far less. And so we are much more productive, if you will, per gallon.
Yes, and again, there still is an issue there when we're talking about our relations with the Middle East and everything else. You had the president last week in Saudi Arabia getting a chilled reception from like a lower level of the royal family, really setting the tone that they're not happy with us, but, you know, we get most of our oil from Canada and Mexico. What about the idea of the Saudis? Are they an ally that we really need anymore? I mean, you take a look at the oil comes from the Middle East, but I think they send most of that to China now.
I think from a standpoint, actually from a long-term, first of all, oil is a global commodity. So it really doesn't matter if they sell to China, because China would then be competing with us in other markets to go get it. We are still import a ton of oil. We still import a ton. And yes, it's a big deal that we're much more self-sufficient here. But I think really from a geopolitical perspective, Saudi Arabia is important to us because the Middle East is basically a bunch of nut jobs. And so I know that's probably not politically correct, but...
Well, we're very politically correct on this show.
But this is a place that has just absolutely been a basket case most of our life. And any of the adults that were in the room before, you know, when Reagan put a bomb on Gaddafi's house, he quit. He decided to give up on the terrorist game. But where they had some strong leaders in Egypt and could hold these coalitions where there was relatively peace. It's all up in smoke now, and the point is the Saudis are actually fighting a lot of the bad guys for us over there, and I think that's probably as important as their oil is.
Kevin Miller with Dave Petzo as we move along here at 580 KIDO. So what should we be looking out for this week?
Well, like we talked earlier, Kevin, this is the season, you know, every quarter. This is the few weeks, about 2-3 weeks in here, where so many companies report. It really is. It certainly can be market moving, but it is one of those things right now where it is company moving. But as we talked about earlier, last week was a stunner, really, in how the market shrugged off some really difficult reports. So again, we'll look and see if the market can do it this week, because I'm quite sure that we'll have a few disappointments out there. It's not been a strong earnings season. Corporate profits are definitely slowing down. They're still growing, but they are definitely slowing down.
You know, when we look at a few other things here at 580KIDO, obviously we want to take a look at just some of the big announcements. We've got the big medical school coming mm-hmm. to Meridian. What does that do, if anything, to the state?
No, anytime as you have a growing base and you have more and more people that would be, let's say, wanting to learn some medical technology or whatever it is, then you have even more of a draw to come to Boise. And I know that's two-edged sword, right? We all love our little place in the world here, and the fact that it's not overly crowded is one of the reasons we love. Love it, I know, and I know but it certainly is booming because people like you, Kevin, have discovered Boise.
People like me.
Well, you did come here in 2009. I know you didn't come from California, and that's kind of our favorite thing is to throw the California people under the bus.
I needed a gig.
I know. And we're happy to have you, Kevin.
I'm happy to be here, and the people like me.
We welcome you at the door.
The people like me. However, when we take a look, and we got into a heated debate on our Saturday show about this, the issue involving incentives. Government incentives like that were used for Chobani. You have people, yep. You know, our friend Tea Party Bob, very critical of the medical school and such. What is your take on incentives? On one hand, they worked great in Alabama. Didn't work so good in North Carolina. They spent a ton of money to bring Dell in, and that just blew up. So your thoughts on this? I mean, every state, every country is offering yep. companies these incentives.
Yeah, well, number one, you have to. You have to compete. But in the state of Idaho, I think we compete not just with giving money. It's also a regulatory path. You try to open up something in California, it will be years and millions of dollars in attorney fees to get anything opened up, right? Well, how about we change that around and say to Chobani, well, you want to build that factory in less than a year? We could do that. We'll remove the red tape. We'll get some things in here. We'll get people working on that at the government level instead of just misfiling everything for years. And we're not going to have you have to worry about all these other issues. That is a very big deal, and I think we compete on that. But either way, you have to compete, and it's not always going to go well. Just like you pointed out, it works well in Alabama to get the car companies there. It didn't work with the Dell computer. It's a hit and miss. Absolutely, it's not. I'm not sure it's going to work out real well for Nevada with having Tesla there. You know, they gave up 10 years of taxes, all these things, all these promises. Let's just see what really happens there as far as this giant economic boom that everybody is sure is going to happen.
Speaking of Tesla, finally, you sold on their car?
Am I sold on their car? I'm sold on the technology of their car, not their car.
I mean, from what I understand, and someone was telling me this a couple of years ago, that they can actually, you can call in or type something, they can adjust your air pressure from their center in California on your tires.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool.
It is.
What are we humans going to do in the future, right?
Me, I'm going back under the rock. Dave Petzo, the Petzo Center, Petzo Financial, thank you.
It's great to see you, Kevin. Thank you.
You're listening to Kevin Miller on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's Talk Station.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. And Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
Hello and welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Please do give us a call. And also, of course, if you want to, email dave@petsofinancial.net. And we'd be delighted to take those as well. Now, it was so interesting to me. Yesterday, I had an opportunity to interview it'll play here in a few weeks. Don Connolly, who's been around the industry for 50 years, and I mean a spokesman, right? He's been a company spokesman for 50 years. So talking about how and coaching advisors all of these decades. So a lot of history there. But I couldn't help but remember that Don Connolly was my constant companion, right? So in my early days, when I would go anywhere and just to find somebody to talk to, I got this big break up in Sun Valley, of all places, right? And I was able to work for the teachers up there and administration. And so I was going up there every week. And on one side was of this tape, and yes, that dates me a good bit, the cassette tape. Was kind of an economist type of spokesperson, right? His name was Dr. Bob, and then on the other side was Don Connolly. So 35 years ago, I was listening to this guy talk about his ideas on how to take complicated topics and bring it down to explain them in a more simple way. And anyway, it was very fun and thoroughly enjoyable running down the old, you know, talking about the old days, driving down the road, listening to him over and over. I mean, you don't listen once. You just keep turning the tape over and over. So anyway, it's fun. You'll hear that in a couple of weeks. It's interesting to me visiting with people who have been in an industry for 50 years and are still passionate about it. He's still traveling around the country. You know, he's like 70 years old, and he just got in from San Diego. So he's just traveling all over, and he still has this great passion for the industry and for advisors. So it's just a lot of fun, and I think you're going to enjoy it very, very much. You know, as far as this market goes, a couple of bad days, not a great week. And yet, when we think about how rough some of these earnings reports are, some of the big companies, right? Facebook is good, but Google, Microsoft, as we discussed last week, terrible. Were they really that terrible? You know, are they that horrible? I think in the case of Microsoft, maybe it wasn't, people don't feel like they've got a bunch of levers they can pull. Google can decide, well, let's maybe not spend $100 million on this new project or that new project. So they can shift from not as profitable to super profitable. So I think they get more of a pass quarter to quarter, although their stock got whacked. So I think the market's been holding up pretty well, considering all of the news hasn't really been very good. So the market continues. Again, from this bottom we had in the first part of February that was pretty severe. And this is, again, where I want to try to take and keep discussing this, I know, over and over and over, year after year after year, how we are taking such short-term looks at things. We really, I know it's past, right? So I know I'm not talking about you, but a lot of people were really quite concerned. And of course, the TV, the blogs were all on fire. Because finally, the Bears were right for a couple weeks. They were right, were they? I don't know. You have to define correct. I think correct is that is being long, owning companies over the decades as they hit record highs. Even though in the interim they have declines. I would call that being right. But others like to think that they can zig and zag and catch the market just right. I don't. Nobody's done it over the long term. There might be a few people on the exchange that can zip in and out in a day. I can't do that. Apparently, Warren Buffett can't do that. Apparently, Peter Lynch couldn't do that. And John Templeton couldn't do that. But perhaps you can. But it's astounding to me how it constantly is amazing, maybe a little annoying, but amazing to me how commentators can go from Super Bears to Super Bulls only because the market now is going a different direction than they were calling for it to go. But we want to know what their commentary is. There's no reason to know, right? You don't need to know. All you need to know is that the market's going up, so you know the commentary is going to be positive. If the market's going down, you know the commentary will be negative. That's the way everybody pretends, to be on the right side of every directional bet. But what that does to people and what that does to our psyche is that we end up nodding our head, and it reinforces the fact, yeah, the market's going down. Yeah. I don't want to buy bargains. No, because it's going to keep going down. Yeah. And it reinforces that. So you never actually buy bargains. We literally watch the chameleons change colors in front of us. Oh, Mr. Kramer, I thought you were bearish last week. Well, remember I cautioned us on... Really? And now we're like Uber... Bears or Uber Bulls, whatever the direction. Whatever the direction is. See, the commentary is, well, pointless. Absolutely pointless. Because I already know what they're going to say. If the market is up next week, they'll be positive. Even if coming into the week they were negative, they pretend to be positive. And vice versa. Every week. I'm a bear. I'm a bull. I'm a bear. I'm a bull. All depending on what the market does. And again, that serves to do nothing. Except, unfortunately, pull us out. Keep us out. Or keep us from perhaps rebalancing and trimming. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We do have to take a quick break. Walt, let me grab you on the other side of the break. And we do have three lines available. Please do ring us up. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's Talk Station. On Idaho's Talk Station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome. Yes, and thank you so much for joining us. And please do so at 580-KIDO, or you can shoot us an email, dave@petzofinancial.net. And also, I somebody just called in, and we're I'm a little confused here. I don't know what through Ronaldo here on the board. He said precious metals in the Shanghai Exchange. I don't know what the question is. I don't have no way. So if you want to, I guess if I'm going to comment on it, I need a little more information. Right now, let's go to Walt. Walt, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I last called you in January, and I talked with you about the late Yale Hirsch's Stock Traders Almanac and how there was the barometer of the trading in January, and without talking any further about that, further in the almanac is the what Yale Hirsch indicated was the May-June disaster area, and tomorrow's May 1st. And you know, you've been talking about the market this morning about Microsoft and Google profits down and all that kind of thing. And so as we approach the May-June disaster area, which is not a good market trading period, I just wanted to bring that up and whether you have any knowledge of the almanac. Back in 1980, I met with Louis Rukeyser and Yale Hirsch in a seminar, financial seminar in Tarrytown, New York. And so I have followed the almanac for many years. And so it behooves what will happen. I noticed last week.
Well, can I ask you a question about this? I mean, does he say that every May and June is bad, or just?
Well, it says the January barometer signals the year ahead, and you know the first five trading days, 10 trading days in the month of January was way down, which signaled that this was going to be a difficult year.
Okay, so what you're saying is this barometer then affects May and June. Is that what you're saying? If
that's
May, if January is down, then May and June are a disaster, but not all years.
May-June disaster area, which is not a good trading period at all.
If January is down. I'm just trying to understand. Is that how that works, or is it May and June are bad months, period?
Well, the barometer indicates for the whole year, and you know, in the, well, it's very difficult for me to explain this to you because you're talking about a market that may or may not exist today. You know, it's all electronically traded and all that. Mom and pop are out of the market. And but what I'm saying is we have to learn from history. And probably, you know, this is the reason I have brought this up for discussion. I wonder if any other listeners are aware of the almanac, the Trader's Almanac.
Yeah, I don't know. Trader's Almanac I've certainly heard of, but they used to have it, but it was more of a reporting, not a a predictive thing. It reported what all the years did.
Well, my perspective, it was definitely, you know, an indicator that is out there, you know. I can't, you know, I could spend more time with you personally, I guess, to explain this. But also, last week they reported the FDIC closed the bank. Did you hear about that?
That the FDIC, they're closing banks all the time. I did not hear about that.
Well, wait a minute. They were closing banks prolifically back, you know, in pre-Obama years. And, you know, we went through a period of that. And but there hasn't been many bank closures for a number of years since then.
Well, there haven't been a lot, but they're constantly closing banks that just aren't capitalized well enough. It's an ongoing thing.
Wait a minute. You're saying they're constantly closing banks?
Yeah, if they don't meet the restrictions, then the FDIC shuts them down. It's not.
Well, yeah. I'm on the internet and I go on the FDIC Connect and I follow the bank closures on that. And there haven't been any since pre Obama years.
There's not any foreclosures. No bank foreclosures at all.
When the balloon hit our economy. Drastically, there were so many bank closures, and
okay. Well, anyway, what's your point, and then we'll because I'm almost out of time.
I just want to bring up a point, my perspective of the market, because I'm old school,
mm-hmm.
and I just, I'm not concerned at all about Microsoft or Google, I am concerned about Carly Fiorino being down in California today, the land of her disastrous HP years and outsourcing jobs from Idaho and California. She was on Glenn Beck's show, and she said she outsourced jobs from California to Texas. And, you know, remember, she bought a Compaq computer back in those days. And anyway, there's so many things that I look at and I have perspective on, and I just want to conclude. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good day now.
You too. Okay, well, bye now. Our number is 580-KIDO. Dave@PetsoFinancial.net. Dave@PetsoFinancial.net. Actually, in our education segment upcoming, I'm going to talk a little bit about an email that actually came in last week. And Joe, thank you for the email. I didn't get it until after the show because it went to our general email. So make sure you say Dave@PetsoFinancial.net. Okay, and we're going to talk about that coming up. We're going to talk about demographics, how it affects stocks, how it affects economies. Joe asked, is it difficult for stocks to appreciate in the next decade due to the boomers selling stocks in retirement? And there's a huge, huge amount of information out there. In fact, one of the famous authors, I don't know what else to say, because I don't want to say famous economist, I guess he is, Dent is his name, and he has been talking about Dow 36,000, now it's apparently Dow disaster. He's pretty much been dead wrong for a really, really, really long time, and I mean big calls. Right, like right before the financial crisis, we're going to 35,000, and then after the financial crisis, it's doom and gloom as the market triples in value. But this segment coming up here, our education segment, it's important to understand, because I had this discussion yesterday about demographics in Japan, and some of the correlations that people draw from one place to another. Okay, so. Like, are we going to be like Japan? In what way, though? We have to kind of be careful with a lot of those different thoughts. But we're going to cover that and talk about demographics a little bit and how it does impact our markets. And hopefully you will participate as well at 580-5436. The other thing, again, is to shoot us an email, dave@petsofinancial.net, P-E-T-S-O. Not the sauce. Also, real quickly here, before we head into our news break, I wanted to mention, too, our website. Feel free to go there, shoot general information over to us, and also use the calculators and articles there. And we'll be right back after the news. Hello, and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petso, and, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only, not this station. Not at some broker-dealer out there. It's just mine. And we might use a stock or two as an example. We talked about Google and Microsoft missing their earnings. That certainly doesn't mean you should buy it or go short. It's just an example. And even if we talk positively about a stock, it's not a buy thing. That's absurd. And we try not to twist in the wind. You know, like this week we're really optimistic because, well, the market was up. And then pretending to have always gotten in front of the pessimism the next week when the market's down. Because I don't know what's going to happen, and nobody does. And that's really what we're trying to do is to talk about and change our perspective in a short term world. How do we think long term? Oh, we pretend to do. We pay it lots of lip service. Well, you know, I'm planning for my retirement. And then how long are you going to live in retirement?
I don't know. What do they think? You know, 20, 30 years? I don't know.
Yeah, 30 plus years. See, retirement's not an end point. It's a change point. In other words, for most people, it's long-term planning. And to make it really simple, once we reach retirement, we spend a lot of time talking about this, of course. How do I have cost of living adjusted income all the days of my life? Because without cost of living adjusted income, we will run out of money. We may not run out of a stack of money, but what it will buy won't be what we need it to buy. Because we won't have enough if it's not growing with the cost of living. We forget. We forget because we live today. And we have a certain amount, and we look around and we see the costs are X for whatever it is we want to buy. And we forget that 5 years from now, and 10 years from now, and 15 years from now, it'll be more. And in some cases, very significantly more. And that's not a scream about how inflation is going to be terrible. But that's what we want to talk about, is how do we produce cost of living adjusted income all the days of our life. How do we do that? And it is kind of easy, kind of hard. It's a difficult thing. But we make up magic products, right? You can have stock market returns with no risk. What about this trading thing that we put kind of a stop loss underneath things? You mean the kind of stop loss that makes sure you guarantee the lowest possible price execution? The one that means with every little correction, you're out of the market as it comes back? That type? There is no magic. There is no magic trading program. You're not going to hear that here. We will happily explain why the equity indexed annuities don't work, won't work, and are, in my opinion, criminal. In how they're pushed on people. Fraudulent, at the least. Is fraud criminal? I think so. And finally, the Department of Labor. Department of Labor. I know, weird. Comes up with rules. Because the insurance industry won't. They won't stop these absurdities. So, as we always talk about, everybody gets what they deserve. We get more government, more oversight, because they won't behave well, which is sad, really sad. You know, before we run to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about demographics here, okay? Because this is, it's an important thing when people talk about all the demographics. And they equate certain things to, like, for example, what are we going to do when we get to be like Japan? Because low interest rates aren't working there, and so they aren't going to be here. And we make simple, overly simple analysis. You know, because this similarity exists in this place, therefore, it's all the same, and it's not. And demographics are an incredibly important thing. So back to this Joe's question from last week. Will it be difficult for stocks to appreciate in the next decade due to the boomers selling stocks in retirement? What a fascinating question, and it is broad and deep, and as I mentioned, Dent has been promoting this thought. Even at the same time he promoted the Dow 35,000, thought as well. Okay? So Mr. Dead Wrong has a point, though, and that demographics do affect markets hugely. But it's more than just the stock market. And this is where people, I think, make an incredible mistake. They always equate the economy to the stock market. Wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. Demographics do affect the economy greatly, and economies do affect stocks, but not directly, not right at that time.
So when people say, oh, the GDP is slowing down, then people will rush around and talk about maybe we should sell stocks. As if the market was never anticipating it. Or an earnings announcement that is great. Why is the stock down? They already knew. It had already been bidded up. They knew the earnings were going to be great. The thing that is now driving the stock down is the future, which is why the correlation, and for example, with the economy and the market, is that when the economy is in recession, stocks begin to rally. Think 09, just as a classic example. We are in a recession, and the market bottomed and rocketed higher, even as the unemployment rate was rocketing higher as well. That's right, the unemployment rate. It was getting worse. The economy was getting worse every month. And stocks were up and up and up. So much to the point that in 90 days, just 90 days, the market was up 45%. In other words, bad news, more bad news. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. And the market is up 45% in just 90 days. Again, 90 days of horrible news. So we oftentimes take and equate the two. Tie them tight together. And it's the same thing with demographics. We do not fully appreciate that markets price in, and that oftentimes the very best investments are those that are priced so good, so low, that it doesn't mean that they're going to have bountiful sales in a bountiful economy, but they're going to do very well, and if you pay the right price, you're going to do extraordinarily well. That's the miss. So as we look at the market and say demographics, actually, by the way, demographics, baby boomers selling stocks, they will. They are going to sell some stocks. They have been selling stocks. And as the millennials save more and more and more for retirement, that's obviously the natural buyer. We also have foreign buyers. The world is growing. We sometimes make the assumption that we're in some kind of a vacuum, that the world's not interconnected, that finance isn't across borders, and it is. So the answer to your question, in short, is I am not in the least bit worried about that, but it is an effect. It's an effect in the economy that is huge, and that is for healthcare, huge, right? For our ability to pay for entitlement programs, that is the big problem, right? Unless all the old people start dying, we have a problem. We have a real problem. We have unfunded liabilities that are in the tens of trillions. No ability to pay for them, none whatsoever. There's just not enough people there. That's the demographic problems. Again, we often take these problems and lay them right over top of the market. Should I own stocks? No, there's problems. Are there problems with corporations? No, but there's problems. So I'm not going to. And we lay all of society's problems on top of, I don't want to own stocks. Which, of course, is silly. Demographics are huge, and we also sometimes take this the wrong way. We look at some place like Japan. I had this discussion yesterday. Well, Japan, we're going to turn it into Japan. Why? Well, I mean, you know, zero interest rates and so on and so forth, right? There's some correlations we're concerned about, right? You know, and the deficits that they have, and we're running huge deficits. I agree. That's a problem. Totally agree. We are not Japan. They have no young people there. The birth rate is negative, terrible. And they have no immigration there. They don't let anybody in their country. They have no natural resources. They have to import everything.
Everything I just said is not at all the United States, demographically. We have immigrants. Although slow, we still have positive birth rates. And obviously we have huge and abundant natural resources. We have to be careful with taking bits and pieces, don't we? Right? Demographics are important. Be careful of correlations. And you can also use them to be thinking through what is, you know, what countries are, have a long runway, not today, but for decades. They're the young ones. The young ones. Think emerging markets. I know nobody wants emerging markets. I get it. I got it. Because we have recency bias. It's not working right now, therefore it won't work. Ever. Okay. Never buy a bargain. Just chase performance. That won't work. But I understand the desire for that. All right, let's go ahead and take a call here. Let's go to Jim in Middleton. Jim, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dave, if you would, could you explain to myself and probably your audience the simple difference between this no-risk investment that some people advertise, the ups and the downs of that, or the fraudulent claims of that, and then just in the general stock market. And, Dave, I'm going to take the answer off the air because I'm heading for the hills and I may lose you.
Okay.
I am listening.
All right, Jim. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your call. I'll do the best I can, okay, right after this break, all right, because it'll take a little bit, couple minutes, okay? All right. Well, thank you, Jim, for the question. Now, I do have to take a quick break here because this is going to take a few minutes to go through. Look, we've talked about this many, many times. I will keep this short and simple. And our number is 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. And also Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Hey, I wanted to follow up real quick, real fast, on a call from the previous hour talking about bank failures. And just as a point of reference, I just Googled that how many bank failures in 2015, and there are eight. There are eight bank failures in 2015. So there are constant bank failures. I'm positive that different websites will use a bank failure as some kind of a scare thing, like it's, you know, now about to rampage out of control, because that's what they do. Fear is a great seller, and fear of, you know, the market, casino, things like that is actually what we fight all of the time here. And it's also what is sold, what is used to sell what our previous caller had called about. Jim, thank you for the phone call on that. So his question is, please, as simple as possible, explain what it is they're talking about when they say they can offer market returns without market risk. Yeah, we all know, your grandmother who never got through junior high knew that that's not true. We all know that. There is no perfect thing that allows us to do it. Otherwise, Warren Buffett would put all his money in it. So would Goldman Sachs. So would I. And I've mentioned we have every financial incentive in the world to utilize these products because they pay very, very high commissions. And just as an example, if we put 25% of our client money, it would be a $10 million payday. $10 million. So I'm not talking about a little bit of incentive. We have massive incentive to please, please, pretty please use this product. Find a way in your heart to be able to use this so that I can get $10 million. I can't find a way ethically to do this. It's not true. Now, how does it work?
you pay into a product and it has caps on it, meaning you won't get up some of the upside. You won't get most of the upside. And what people don't understand is when we say the market does, say, 10% a year for your whole life, which is true. That's what it's done. It doesn't do that in a straight line. It almost never does 10. It does losses occasionally, as we've discussed. It's a normal routine thing, not meant to be, let's run for the hills. It's normal, really normal for markets to pull back and then go to all-time highs. This is what it does, right? We pull back, go to all-time highs. Pull back some more, go to all-time highs. Pull back, go to all-time highs. And nobody knows how it's going to swing around. So why not just have this thing come in there and stop us out, right? So I don't go down. So I just go up, and then when we have the normal pullbacks, I don't pull back. Very cool. How do you pay for that, right? I mean, what is the magic that does that? That pays, you know, 10% commissions to the people that write that really cool product. How do we pay for that? You know, you do. You do by owning the product. Who do you think pays for it? No matter what they say. Oh, well, you know, the insurance company pays me. You don't. Really? Yeah, they do. They're the ones that write the check, so technically, yeah, but it comes out of the product. How does that happen if you're going to get stock market returns? You know you're not. Now, what is the product? They buy options, futures contracts, to stop out and make sure that it doesn't lose. How do they get the money to do that and pay these massive commissions? The answer is they cap the upside, and they trap you in the product for a decade or more. You can't get out, not without huge cost. I mean, the insurance company's out 10% or whatever I actually saw one 20% for the commissions. They need to recover that. That comes out if you pull out early. It comes out of your returns year after year. So they are simply making sure that it can't go down. They're not guessing the market. They can't go down by buying options. If those options get expensive, they put more restrictive caps on your product, even though you already bought the product. It's not guaranteed to stay the same way. So what they do is that they'll say, okay, if you get market returns up to, say, 8%. Well, that sounds great. I get 8 every year then if the market goes up. No, you don't. Because the market doesn't go up 8 every year. On the way to 10, it does 20% sometimes on the 10 average. It does 12. It does 18. It does 30 sometimes. You don't get any of that. None. We saw a product that had over 4% cost built in. So what you got was, if the market did 5, you got 1. And yes, if the market goes down, you don't lose. You also can't win. So what you have is a product that traps you, that has extraordinarily high cost, incredible commissions, every incentive under the sun to put people in to, yes, do the wrong thing. Every incentive in the world to do that. Not bound by securities laws. See, I can't say that. I can sell this product. I can. I always could have. But I can't tell you what they tell you, which is you get market returns without market risk, because that's not true. It was securities laws do not allow you to not tell the truth. Weird. But apparently insurance laws do. Cool. So they don't carry a securities license. They only carry an insurance license. And remember with the bottom line of this, fear sells. Fear sells. So if people are scared of the Wall Street casino or what have you, whatever you want to call it, label it. Do whatever you want. Scare people. Markets fluctuate. It's what they do. Sometimes the fluctuation is negative and even highly negative. That's what you have to put up with in the market to get the greatest returns that of any investment. It's the price you pay. And there's no way to avoid that by packaging it up in some kind of pretty rainbow, pretty bow. You can't. To get market returns, you have to participate in the market. Period. Period. Full disclosure would mean nobody would buy this. That's all I'm asking for. Full disclosure that the securities laws require. You're not allowed to lie. That's all. That's all. We know that in our heart. You can't do that. So don't. Don't go to the dinner seminar and pretend you're getting information. You are not. I made that mistake decades ago in Las Vegas. Well, cool, they're giving away a show. Let's just go listen. I mean, hours later, I feel like I barely got out alive. It's not information. It's a pitch. No such thing as a free lunch or dinner. There's not. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Jim, thank you for the question. Appreciate it. And hopefully, that's about as simple as I can make it. If you have further questions, you want to dive deeper, I'm happy to discuss it. Right now, we're going to take a break for Fox News at the bottom of the hour. And hopefully, we'll take more of your calls. 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's Talk Station. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO, and also, of course, a Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. And, of course, we always take priority. We do have some emails. I will go to those in a minute. But we always take priority with the phones. Andy, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please. Hello, Andy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
So I wanted to ask you, let me put you back on my – okay, you still there?
Yes.
All right. I wanted to ask you what you – if you know anything about the Greek finance minister, the former Greek finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, his new book called And the Weak Suffer What They Must, about the IMF in Germany loaning money at knowing that the Greek people would not be able to pay it back and keep loaning it to them, but the money all went to the banks and not to the people to help reduce their financial situation over there, economic situation over there, and about how it was kind of all of a coup d'etat with the banks, and it was kind of he referred to it as a fiscal waterboarding of those of Greece, and how that in turn kind of went to expanding trade deficits. I think it was in that same interview conversation, and how America was kind of like a giant vacuum cleaner sucking up trade deficits, and that the entire stock market in America is kind of a Ponzi scheme because it's loaded with all these toxic assets. Do you know much about his book?
No, I don't. I don't. Nor do I, particularly
care.
care of his opinion. I mean,
fear-mongering things again.
Yeah, of course it is. But it's not just that. Yeah, there's plenty of fear-mongering out there. That's constant. That's there all the time. All I do is just I just choose to not constantly be bathed in it, if you will.
Yeah,
but
there's one thing. There was something they mentioned about how the banks in America have got it set up, and they wrote into their bylaws now that they have to pay off their vendors before the people that have money in the bank will get any money, because they know that there's all those toxic assets sitting out there, and they've rigged it so that they have to pay them off first before they have any money to pay off the people that have their money in the banks.
Well, Andy, I can't speak to European bank laws. I really don't know. I do know the depositors in the United States are guaranteed up to $250,000, and their money comes first, not investors.
This guy said, no, the banks have got it written in their bylaws.
So that guy said, nah. Who is he? Who cares?
He's a former Greek finance minister.
And I know he was a Greek finance minister, and Greece is a frickin' basket case. I mean, socialism is pathetic, and now we're pointing the finger at America, which has the strongest banking system in the world. Now, I'm not saying that it's not beyond reproach. We found out in 2008 it isn't. But to state that there's just piles of toxic assets there is, well, tell us where. What are you talking about? Because we go through stress test after stress test. The banks are the most regulated and should be. They have to be regulated. After what they did in 2008, after what the the only regulation that doesn't exist is on the politicians that forced the banks to lend to people that were never going to pay it back. And then they set up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to make sure that all those toxic assets had the government guarantee stamp on it. It was absurd. And the government is more than complicit with the banks over this. There's plenty of blame to be spread around. But for me to be worried about what the Greek finance minister thinks, who ran up an obscene hundreds of percent of GDP debts, is going to point a finger at the Americans for doing what? It just is another American bashing, nonsensical thing to me. Look, I'm sure he's a smart guy, but I don't understand why we believe just because somebody says, well, they rewrote all this. Nobody else has said that. Just the Greek finance minister is concerned about the toxic assets and depositors and banks won't get paid. Everybody else in the country thinks the FDIC is there for $250,000, which is not in the bank. And also, on top of that, they require that the depositors be paid, not stockholders of the company. Now, lenders get ahead of stockholders. They do not get ahead of depositors. Any more than a corporation, lenders get ahead of the people's salaries that have already been earned. They get paid off first. No matter what. I just don't know. And if there's a banker out there that knows something beyond that, I'd be willing to discuss it or hear them. But some guy in Greece who didn't do a very good job and is lecturing the United States on bank laws seems absurd to me.
I'm not sure that this guy was the guy that led Greece into all that. 'Cause he said he was only in office 5 months, and he resigned because he didn't like what the bank, or the Germany, France, and the IMF kept loaning money to Greece, knowing fully well they weren't going to be able to pay it back, and then they lend them more money to pay it back, and knowing still that they wouldn't be able to pay them. They did that three times, and finally he just said he had enough of it.
I totally understand that he wants to. He was not happy with the deal to get the money, but they didn't have any money. And so he wants to rewrite history after he lost his job in 5 months because nobody was going to talk to him. They shut down the talks. He's out. And so he was fired. He had the opportunity to resign. He was out. If he wants to rewrite that, that's cool. Good for him. He's got a pen. He can write a book. If you have the money and you are willing to lend it to somebody, but you have certain restrictions, why are you the criminal? Greece didn't have any money. They go hat in hand, and they expect what? The French and the Germans to just give them money. Don't pay it back. Just give us money. We know we retired people at 50 years old. We understand we've overspent. We know, and we're not willing to change. That's the way it is. Well, then we're not willing to lend you more money. Have at it. Goodbye. I don't know what's bad about that or why I'm supposed to feel sorry for Greece in that. I don't know why. I should. They spent themselves to that place, and now they are actually being bailed out. But they are asked, told, required to actually get their fiscal house in order, or I won't lend you. That sounds like, well, tough love, kind of. Or should they just give it to them? Was that what his argument was? I think we should have just been given that. Is that?
No, I don't think that was his argument. I think his argument was that, from what I understood during the interview, was that the money went only to the banks and it didn't go to resolve economic situation over there, and it just is a deal between the banks, and he kind of called it, or likened it to fiscal waterboarding is the terminology he used, and it was just the banks playing with the money, and it never really resolved any economic issues.
Of course it doesn't. When you determine that you're not going to change the way you spend money or collect taxes, of course nothing changes. That's not up to the French and Germans. But anyway, we digress. Andy, I got to roll. I've got to take a break and get to some emails as well. Okay?
I just wanted to get your thoughts on it.
I appreciate it, Andy. Thank you for your call.
You have a good day.
You do the same. Thank you.
Bye bye.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Plenty of time left in today's program. I hope you'll ring us up. Shoot us an email at dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. If you have an email, you have a question, dave@petzofinancial.net. Also, if you have a comment or question, thoughts, we really do want to hear, what do you want to talk about in our education segment? Instead of me just trying to find stuff, how about, what do you want to know? Shoot a question over. We'd love to deal with that, okay? And you do that during the week, go to petzofinancial.com, petzofinancial.com. That's our website, and love to hear from you there. Also, there are articles and calculators to help you with your financial planning as well. And I always forget this. I don't know why I forget it. It's the reason most people go to the website. And that is the podcasts are there, too. So if you missed something you want to catch, you can certainly do that. And normally, I know we had a little computer issue. The computer was stolen for the past week. But normally, Ronaldo actually uploads those now, right after the program's done. So they're there by Monday morning for sure. So anyway, that's there as well. Now, back to emails. Dave, in general, are the international markets cheaper than the U.S. market? If so, by approximately how much? Are they a good buy at these levels? Mike, thank you for the call, or the question. You know, it varies. Some markets are actually more expensive than the U.S., although by and large, when you say international, they are much cheaper than the U.S. and should be. The U.S. is doing better than most markets around the world. That's typical. It also says that you want to be investing in areas where, I like the way John Templeton put it, and that is, people get this completely backwards. They're always asking me, where is the best outlook? Now, that's the hardest part in my mind. This is where the disconnect is for people. They think they can go in and get stuff cheap, but where the outlook is good. And you can't. Because the outlook reflects the price. Things can bounce around and be cheaper, say, relatively to other things. But they can't be cheap with a good outlook. Not really cheap. So when we think about that, you think about it this way. Hey, let's just talk emerging markets, for example, okay? Let's talk about one of the best performing markets this year. I'm not kidding you. Year to date. Think about it in your mind, and you'll know in a minute. Okay? Because it's not what you think. Not what you think at all. But this market is a market where there's been complete turmoil, political turmoil, that makes our presidential election look easy. Easy. Okay? They're trying to impeach a president. Everything they do for the Olympics can't go right. They've got massive deficits. Massive problems. And nobody but nobody. This is an area that not only is down and cheap, and everybody says, yeah, it's cheap. Its outlook is horrible. And nobody says, you should go and invest there. In fact, everybody says, you can't invest there. You can't do that. You cannot go there. That is the point, the peak of pessimism. That's what John Templeton's talking about. He's not saying it's wise for people to throw all their money in places like that. What he is saying is it's cheap. So when we look around the world and you ask the question of how cheap, well, how much cheaper depends where. You know, a place like Brazil, even now, after a massive, I don't know if it's like 40% since the beginning, it's a huge upsurge in their markets. Partly because of a peak of pessimism, right? Huge upsurge. I'm not saying you should go after markets like that in full. And when we look at those and we say they're five times cheaper, you know, they're a fifth of the price relative to earnings and everything else. But as we look at Europe, a more developed nation with global multinationals selling all over the world, just like ours, their market is significantly cheaper. How much? About a third relative to earnings. They have higher dividends. But their outlook isn't as good. It's not as rosy. So it depends. And even as you go across Europe, if you're talking about global multinationals in the Baltic states versus the Eurozone, they're closer to their U.S. counterparts. They're barely less expensive. So you have to define it around the world. If you're really saying, where are the bargains, which I think is what you're actually asking, you have to go to emerging markets. You have to. And it really has come close to the peak of pessimism. Not the peak of pessimism in most nations, in some. But the idea of investors putting money in emerging markets, no, we're not going to do that. After three miserable years of performance, no way, I don't want to put any money there. That's what we do. But we say we want to buy cheap, but we won't, and we don't have any patience. When we buy cheap, we expect that to change immediately. We do. Even if, relatively speaking, you have more patience than, say, a two-year-old, that doesn't really mean you have patience, right? Think about it. What are as I started off talking about today, how short-term we are in a long-term proclamation. We proclaim that we want a long-term investment. And we invest. And think about it short-term. How come my
Why are we, why do I have an investment there? That's just dumb. You know how I know it's dumb? Because it went down. That's dumb. Dumb, dumb. Okay. You expect all investments to go up then? Well, no, no, I really don't. I mean, I realize that nobody can do that, but that's what you just said. Well, but everybody knew that emerging markets weren't going to work. Did they? That's interesting. What everybody knows is what has worked. What nobody knows is when what's working will change and not. And when what's not working will change and start being on top. Who knew that Brazil would be red hot when there's riots in the street? Who knew? You don't. You never do. But that's the input we always have, constantly. Here's where you should be. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Because that's where it was, not where we're going. Keep your eye on the horizon. Have a great weekend, everybody.